into two sections. The first six chapters having to do with Zerubbabel and the exiles that he led back from Babylon to Jerusalem with the for the purpose of rebuilding the temple. And they returned, and on the seventh month of the year in which they returned, they assembled in Jerusalem, having built an altar, and they began to offer the sacrifices that were required at various times of the year. And then in the beginning of the second year that they were there, which was just a few months later, they actually began building the temple. And they made a start, but no sooner had they started than they began to have opposition from those of Samaria, those people who lived in the old region of Samaria. And we talked about that and where those people came from and who they were and so forth. So they were interrupted and finally forbidden to go any further. And so for some 14 years, the work was not much work, if any, particularly in the latter part of those years, was done on the temple. Until in chapter 5, we read that the prophets Haggai and Zechariah began to prophesy and stir up the people. Haggai first, 2 months later, Zechariah. And they succeeded in renewing the spirit of the people, and they determined to begin again to build the temple. But no sooner had they done it than Tattenai and a friend of his came down, an associate of his came down and inquired, who gave you permission to do this? What are your names? And so forth. But this time, they were not so easily set aside. They continued working on the temple and suggested that these people inquire of the king of Persia, get him to look into the records and see if what they're doing is not actually what Cyrus, king of Persia, had asked them to do. So they did that, and in chapter 6 of Ezra, we learned that at that time the king was Darius. Darius, and in the second year of his reign, he made that inquiry, found the record of where Cyrus had asked them to come back and rebuild the temple, and he not only permitted them to continue, but you'll recall he even added to it. He helped them in many other ways, and so I think we studied all of that last week, let's begin now this morning with chapter 7 of the book of Ezra. Now, after this, by the way, before we get started, this is 57 years later than the chapter 6 that we just read. 57 years later. And now Darius, his long reign as king of Persia is over. His son, whose name was Xerxes, his reign was over. By the way, his son Xerxes was probably the Ahasuerus, the king during the time of Esther. By the way, most commentators put the events of the book of Esther between chapter 6 and chapter 7. So Darius was no longer king. His son Xerxes was no longer king. And now his grandson was king, Artaxerxes number one, who the historians refer to as Artaxerxes Longimanus. Longimanus, I believe, is the way they pronounce it. And so during his reign, in fact, in the seventh year of his reign, 57 years now after chapter 6, Ezra what we're going to read about Ezra. And he was a member of the high priest family, and we'll learn some things about him as we go along. Now, after this, so 57 years after chapter 6, after this, in the reign of Artaxerxes, king of Persia, Ezra, the son of Seraiah, son of Azariah, son of Hilkiah, son of Shalom, son of Zadok, son of Ahitub, son of Amariah, son of Azariah, son of Meraioth, son of Zerahiah, son of Uzziah, son of Buckeye, son of Abishal, son of Phinehas, son of Eleazar, son of Aaron, chief priest. All of that to let us know that he was from the high priest family. He was a descendant of Aaron. And he was a priest. But not only that, this Ezra went up from Babylon. He was a scribe, skilled in the law of Moses that the Lord, the God of Israel, had given. He was a scribe. A scribe is one whose life is devoted to the law of God. He is one who is a copier of the law, an interpreter of the law, and a teacher of the law. He devotes his life not only to the study of the law, but he also, his chief occupation is to teach the law. And so this Ezra, this priest, who was also a scribe, skilled in the law, went up from Babylonia. And the king granted him all that he asked for the hand of the Lord his God was on him. There's something about the mind and the character of a number of the Old Testament Jewish men that gained them favor with world rulers. You would remember Joseph and Pharaoh, who was eventually promoted to second in the kingdom of Egypt. There was Daniel in Babylonia, Nebuchadnezzar, and later Belshazzar. And now we're reading about Ezra, who, as I think we'll see as we go on, not only was known but was favored in a number of ways by the king of Persia and his chief counselors. And there went up also to Jerusalem in the seventh year of Artaxerxes the king, some of the people of Israel, and some of the priests and Levites, the singers and gatekeepers, and the temple servants. Now, Ezra is doing here what historians often do. They will summarize history at the beginning of a document, and then following that, they will present the details that make up that summary. And that's kind of what he's doing here. And Ezra came to Jerusalem in the fifth month, which was in the seventh year of the king. For on the first day of the first month, he began to go up from Babylonia. And on the first day of the fifth month, he came to Jerusalem, for the good hand of God was on him. 4 months then in making this trip. I think I've shared with you before, and I keep meaning to bring a map to show you, and I need to tie a string around my finger. I'd like to show you, but there are two routes. If you took the shorter route across the Arabian Desert, it was 500 and some odd miles. But most of the time, they took the route that went northerly or up toward Carchemish and came in through Phoenicia and down through northern Samaria and so forth. That route was about 900 miles. And so they were 4 months, about 120 days in making that journey. Now, if you divide it out, that's an average of about 7.5 miles a day, which is not a lot, but But remember now, we're going to learn as we continue reading that about 1,800 men were making this trip. So when you add their families, if you say four or five per family, you're looking at somewhere around 8,000, 9,000, 10,000 people. That's still not quite as many as the nearly 50,000 that returned with Zerubbabel, but still quite a number of people to be tracking through the desert and all that they would have with them. And so even though it's not hard to walk 7 miles in a day, they probably wouldn't travel every single day as well. They probably would rest. But anyway, they made the journey in the 4 months' time. And on the first day of the first month, he began to go up from Babylonia. And on the first day of the fifth month, he came to Jerusalem, for the good hand of God was on him. Those journeys were dangerous. They were treacherous, especially when you were carrying items of value. And we're going to be learning that they had many items of much value with them. And they would have been targets of thieves and bandits and the like. But God blessed them. And oftentimes when the governments would move money like this from one place to another, maybe they owed another kingdom something, they would send thousands of soldiers with those who were carrying the money to protect them. And so, but God was with them and protected them on the journey. Now, this is a copy of the letter that King, now he gets down to the nuts and bolts of the matter. This is a copy of the letter that King Artaxerxes gave to Ezra the priest, the scribe, a man learned in matters of the commandments of the Lord and his statutes for Israel. Artaxerxes, king of Israel, to Ezra the priest, the scribe of the law of God of heaven, peace. And now, notice this expression, scribe of the law of the God of heaven. Most of these kingdoms and these kings were what we would refer to as polytheists. They believed in many gods. In fact, it was quite common in those days for people to believe that even locales, that almost every locale had their own god. In fact, they would go so far sometimes to talk about the gods of the hills and the gods of the valleys. And so, but here, and I'm not suggesting that he had the same faith and understanding of God that the Jewish people did, but he seems to have been influenced by Ezra and perhaps those before him. To have a little higher concept of God than that. And he refers to him as the God of heaven, not just the God of Jerusalem or of some particular place. I make a decree that every one of the people of Israel or their priests or Levites in my kingdom who freely offer to go to Jerusalem may go with you. So anyone who wants to go, this is the same thing Cyrus had said, wasn't it? Cyrus had said, to Zerubbabel, anyone who wants to go with you may go. And he says, and so Artaxerxes says the same thing. Verse 14, for you are sent by the king and his seven counselors to make inquiries about Judah and Jerusalem according to the law of your God, which is in your hand. So reference is made here to his counselors. In the book of Esther, there are seven counselors. And in the book of Esther, we read about the same group. So apparently this was a group of advisors, a standing group of advisors that assisted the king in his governing and so forth. In the book of Esther, chapter 1, names are even given for those seven counselors. So as I said, this seems to have been a standing thing. So one thing... He says, we're sending you, for one thing, to inquire. What do they want to inquire about? To make inquiries about Judah and Jerusalem according to the law of your God. It's fascinating to me that this king of Persia, of this heathen country, thought, considered the law of Moses, even the Ten Commandments, a fit document to rule and judge a people. Isn't that something? And by the way, it's not been different down through the years. I don't remember his name, Mannion, I believe. There was a dean of the law school at Notre Dame, just a minute, Stan, of Notre Dame a few years ago, who wrote and talked about how that he had made a study and the governing documents of 47 of our 48 contiguous states had as a basis for their law the Ten Commandments. So we unfortunately we're getting more and more away from that in our society today. But even our own country in its beginning had that as the basis for our government. Yes, excellent. I think that's exactly the case. And I think he could see that their law was better than their own. And so he wants to inquire about how things are going, and are the people in Judah and Jerusalem observing the law? Now, between Zerubbabel and Ezra, we don't know how long, but there was a period of time, apparently, when the people didn't have a strong leadership. And so the peace and serenity of the community was kept by just a group of princes and leaders who governed in matters of criminal and matters civil. But with regard to religious things, the people just pretty much were a law unto themselves. And we're going to see evidence of that. And here. But anyway, so whatever seems good to you, verse 17. With this, verse 16. Well, where did I get? Okay, you're being sent in verse 14 to make inquiry and also to carry, verse 15, to carry the silver and gold that the king and his counselors have given. Freely offered to the God of Israel, whose dwelling is in Jerusalem. Now, in verse 25 of the next chapter, reference will be made to the king and his counselors giving gifts, gold and silver vessels. And so we don't know whether that's what this is talking about here or whether there maybe was a combination of money and of these of these vessels. And by the way, those vessels, lest I forget, would not be the vessels that were taken by Nebuchadnezzar out of the temple. Cyrus, you remember, returned those to Zerubbabel on his when he first came back. So apparently there was not enough of those, and there was some need still that had been communicated back to Babylon, and so these additional vessels were sent. Verse 16. With all the silver and gold that you shall find in the whole province of Babylonia, and with the freewill offerings of the people and the priests, vowed willingly for the house of their God that is in Jerusalem. So we want you to go back, make inquiry, see how things are going. We want you to take these gifts that the king is saying that I and my counselors, that our government is giving to you. And then anything else that you're able to raise from among your Jewish brethren and anybody else in Babylon to take back for the ministry, primarily for the ministry of the temple and for the, you can imagine all of the sacrifices. You know, we talked about those earlier and the number of animals and so forth that were sacrificed. So there was need for that. With this money, verse 17, you shall with all diligence buy bulls, rams, lambs, and their grain offerings and their drink offerings, and you shall offer them on the altar of the house of your God that is in Jerusalem. Again, an indication that the people who returned were not wealthy, and they had not been able to, even since they'd gotten back, to accumulate great wealth, and so there was a continuing need, apparently, for assistance in being able to buy, purchase the animals that were required for the offering. Whatever seems good to you and your brothers to do with the rest of the silver and gold, you may do according to the will of God. And so, first of all, I want you to make sure that you acquire what is needed for the sacrifices. If there's any left over, you can do whatever you think is best according to the will of God. And we think, some commentators think, and we'll see this later in verse 27, that when reference is made to Artaxerxes helping to beautify the temple. So some think that extra money was put toward, the temple had already been built, but perhaps there were things that could be done better and the temple could be beautified, and they think perhaps that's what was done with it. Any question or comments? The vessels that have been given you for the service of the house of God, you shall deliver before the God of Jerusalem, and whatever else is required for the house of your God, which it falls to you to provide, you may provide it out of the king's treasury. And he's going to give him a commission. He's not talking about the treasury back in Susa, back in Babylon. He's talking about the provincial treasuries where taxes were paid into, and then the money would be gathered there and sent to Babylon. So whatever else you need, you can go to these treasuries, and he's going to give them a commission, him a commission, to tell these people they must do this. And I, Artaxerxes the king, make a decree to all the treasurers in the province beyond the river, whatever Ezra the priest, the scribe of the law of God of heaven, requires of you, let it be done with all diligence. Up to 100 talents of silver, 100 cores of wheat, 100 baths of wine, 100 baths of oil, and salt without prescribing how much. 100 talents of silver. And later on, we're going to learn, I believe, over 300 talents of gold. A talent was 75 pounds. And one of the estates that I've been working on for the school, I've learned something about these coins and how much they're worth. And a single 1 ounce gold coin, based on the market value of some that I had to convert to cash for the estate, if I remember correctly, it was $1,800 per coin, per 1 ounce of gold. So you do the math there. We're talking about an awful lot of money that was involved here. Whatever is decreed by the God of heaven, let it be done in full for the house of the God of heaven, lest his wrath be against the realm of the king and his sons. And also, we also notify you that it shall not be lawful, now get this, to impose tribute, custom, or toll on any one of the priests, the Levites, the singers, the doorkeepers, the temple servants, and other servants of this house of God. And this sort of thing has come over even to us in our time. Ministers of the gospel, even in our country, are favored in certain ways. There's housing allowance and so forth. They don't have to count that. In other words, tax benefits to those who are ministers, full-time ministers of the gospel and such like. Any questions? Now 25. And you, Ezra, according to the wisdom of your God that is in your hand, appoint magistrates and judges who may judge all the people in the province beyond the river, all such as know the laws of your God, and those who do not know them, you shall teach them. Not only is the law of the Lord your God going to be the law of the land, along with my word, he says, but if they don't know it, you're going to teach it, because we're going to, well, here's why it's important. Whoever, verse 26, for whoever will not obey the law of your God and the law of the king, let judgment be strictly executed on him, whether for death or banishment or for confiscation of his goods or for imprisonment. You're talking about being given power and authority. Why, he was, at least for that province, the supreme ruler and appointed, you know, the various ones beneath him that were to govern the people and to help teach the law. And those who did not obey, he had the power to do these very things that we talk about, whether for death or banishment or confiscation of their property and the such like. The book of Revelation talks about a group of people that in the Roman government, if I remember correctly, the name of that, they were the Concilia, is that right? In other words, it was the Roman government could to try to get the people to abandon their faith in Christ and express favor to the emperor. They could confiscate your house and the things that you own. So that was going on even in the Roman times. And whoever will not, in verse 27, abruptly, the letter, the record of the letter, and by the way, that had been not in Hebrew, but immediately in this verse, he reverts back to the Hebrew language. And he says, blessed be the Lord, the God of our fathers, who put such a thing as this into the heart of the king to beautify the house of God that is in Jerusalem. Now there's that expression, to beautify the house of God. So with some of those funds, apparently they did something to beautify, to continue the building of the house of the temple. And who extended to me his steadfast love before the king and his counselors and before all the king's mighty officers, I took courage, for the hand of the Lord of God was on me, and I gathered leading men from Israel to go up with me. So there was something about, as we said a while ago, something about Ezra that endeared himself not only to the king, but his counselors, and even to many of the officers as well. And so the king didn't have to fight the inner circle, so to speak, to do for Ezra what he did for him. Now, chapter 8 is kind of like chapter 2 was. You remember in chapter 2, there was a long list of the names of the people, the families, not individual names, but names of the chiefs of families and families that returned with Ezra. And that's what we have here. In fact, this list contains the same families, for the most part, are mentioned, not in the same order. And of course, there are not nearly as many in these families mentioned as there was in chapter 2. But what we have here, these are the heads. Verse 1 of chapter 8, these are the heads of the fathers' houses. And this is the genealogy of those who went up with me from Babylonia in the reign of Artaxerxes the king. And so he lists these people here. And the numbers, I said, when it's all added together, we won't go into all of that, but it's somewhere between 1,700 and 1,800 men. And so when you estimate a certain number for each family, we're talking about 8, 9, 10,000 people probably. Now in verse 15, let's pick up. So, I gathered them to the river that runs through Ahava. Now, we'll learn in just a minute. They're 9 days into their trip. They've left Susa. They've left Babylon. And they started on their way. And 8 or 9 days along their way, they came to a place that apparently Ezra knew that there were a lot of Jewish people living there. So they stopped there. They halted for 3 days. Why? And there we camped 3 days. As I reviewed the people and the priest, I found there were none of the sons of Levi. Now follow me here. There were priests in the group. And priests are what? Levites. But there were no Levites who were not priests. You understand what I'm saying? In other words, all priests are Levites, but not all Levites are priests. So no Levites had returned with him. When you look back to chapter 2, if you do that, you'll see that even though there were many, many priests that returned result with Zerubbabel, y'all have to excuse me, my lip that had surgery on years ago is numb, and this morning it's especially numb, and I have trouble forming some of my words. A lot of priests returned with Zerubbabel, but not many Levites. And here, initially, no Levites are returning. And so he found no Levites. So then I sent for Eliezer, Ariel, Shemaiah, Elnathan, Jerib, Elnathan, Nathan, Zechariah, Meshulam, leading men, and for Joarib and Elnathan, who were men of insight. And I sent them to Edu, the leading man in the place of Casiphia, telling them what to say to Edo and to his brothers, and the temple and to the temple servants at the place of Casiphia, namely to send us ministers for the house of God. In other words, we need the Levites assisted. The Levites who were not priests assisted the priest in so many ways, as we learned from the book of Exodus and Leviticus and all the way through the Old Testament, and all that related to the temple and temple worship and so forth. And he sent these people, and he sent them to a particular person and told him what to say, and by the good hand of our God on us, they brought us a man of discretion of the sons of Mahli, the son of Levi, son of Israel, and Sherebiah with his sons and kinsmen, 18, and also Hashabiah with him Jeshiah of the sons of Merari and his kinsmen and their sons, 20. So what's that? That's 38. And then besides them, 220 temple servants whom David and his officials had set apart to attend the Levites. These were all mentioned by name. And so, what does that all add up to? Whatever it is. Several hundred altogether of the Levites that came to him there at Ahiva to make the trip with him. And then I proclaimed a fast there at the river Ahiva, and that we might humble ourselves before God to seek from him a safe journey for ourselves, our children, and our goods. For I was ashamed to ask the king for a band of soldiers and horsemen to protect us against the enemy on the way, since we had told the king, the hand of our God is for good on all we who seek him, and the power of his wrath is against all who forsake him. And so Ezra is saying, I want him to know that our faith is genuine, our faith is real. We believe in our God to protect us. And so we didn't want to say we believe God will protect us, but you send us a bunch of men to make sure of that. So we fasted and implored our God for this, and he listened to our entreaty. Then I set apart 12 leading priests, Jeremiah, Hashabiah, and 10 of their kinsmen with them, and I weighed out to them the silver and the gold and the vessels, the offering of the house of our God that the king and his counselors and his lords and all Israel there present had offered. And I weighed out into their hands 650 talents of silver, and silver vessels worth 200 talents, and 100 talents of gold, 20 bowls of gold worth 1,000 derricks, and 2 vessels of fine, bright bronze as precious as gold. I believe Brother Ferris, I believe, it talked to us some time ago about these derricks. This is what the archaeologists have helped us with. For a long time, the critics are always looking for something to dig about. And so they said, oh, this is an example of mistakes of the Bible because derricks were not in use back at this time. Well, the archaeologists keep digging, and behold, they dug up and found these coins exactly in a place that dated back to the very time of this and proved, of course, as has been done many, many times, that the Bible was correct. So I said to them, you are holy to the Lord, and the vessels are holy, and the silver and the gold are a freewill offering to the Lord, the God of your fathers. Guard them, keep them until you weigh them before the chief priests and the Levites and the heads of fathers' houses in Israel at Jerusalem within the chambers of the house of the Lord. So very wisely, Ezra divided all this stuff up between these 12 people, and I'm sure they had additional people to help them, but he's dividing out the responsibility, and he's doing it to protect himself and to also protect to make sure that the things, and he says he divided it out, made a record of it, and he said, when we get to Jerusalem, we're going to do the same thing when we turn it over. And when they got there, they did, and everything matched up. Okay, any questions or comments? Yes. That's right. For those of you listening, Brother Brandon was saying that Ezra says that God had put it in the heart of this king to favor him in all these ways. And then he commented on how that God accomplishes that. He uses men, he made reference to Naaman and his cleansing and how that came about because of a maid that assisted his wife and who in turn told him about the prophet back the providence of God is a marvelous thing, isn't it? It's a wonderful, wonderful thing. And we see it at work in our lives. Yes. Uh-huh. That's a lot of silver. Makes you wonder how they transported it all. That's exactly right. Well, the old clock on the wall. Let's see. Let's at least try to get through this chapter if we can. And so, guard them and keep them. So the priests and the Levites took the weight of the silver and gold. Then we departed from the river Ahava. And on the 12th day of the first month. So they were there 3 days. And so if they departed that's how we know it took them about 8 or 9 days to get there. We came to Jerusalem, and there we remained 3 days. They were tired, as you can imagine. And so they took 3 days to kind of refresh themselves. And then on the fourth day, within the house of God, the silver and gold and the vessels were weighed into the hands of Meremoth, the priest, the son of Uriah, and everything matched up. The whole was counted and weighed, and the weight of everything was recorded. At that time, those who had come from captivity, the returned exiles, offered burnt offerings to the God of Israel, 12 bulls of Israel, 96 rams, 27 lambs, and a sin offering, 12 male goats. All this was a burnt offering unto the Lord. Now, two significant things about that. All of this was burnt offerings. Now, burnt offerings could not be eaten, were not eaten. So none of these offerings were eaten. You know, there were other offerings that parts of it would be offered, then they would eat. A lot of it would be eaten by the priest. Sometimes the offerer was able to take back to his family some for it to eat. So, but these were all burnt offerings and could not be eaten. But all of that, it mentions sin offering. The book of Leviticus teaches us that the sin offering was always done first. And so here, if we read this, we would understand the sin offering was done first as an atonement for the people's sins. And following that, all of these burnt offerings were an indication of the people's committing themselves going forward to the service of God. And they delivered the king's commission to the king's satraps and to the governors of the province beyond the river, and they aided the people and the house of God. The difference in the satraps and the governors, the satraps, as I understand it, were more military-type officers, whereas the governors would be more of a civil-type leader. Any quick question before we leave today? All right, we'll finish up Ezra next Sunday, and that'll leave us 1 month to look at Nehemiah. Thank you.